WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we're talking about two opposite answers to the question, what level of physical intimacy is acceptable in the cinema? Later we'll hear from Wash West, whose art house film The Fluffer is set in the gay porn world. In Iran, no physical contact is allowed on screen between a man and a woman. Not even a husband and wife can touch. Censorship in Iran is pretty rigid. Screenplays must be approved for content before production. The cast and crew members must be approved before they're hired. The finished film must be approved before it is shown. In spite of this, a new wave of Iranian films has been met with critical acclaim around the world. The film A Taste of Cherry by Abbas Kiarostami was a joint winner of the top prize at the Cannes Film Festival in 1997. The Iranian film Kandahar has been playing American art houses, and another acclaimed Iranian film, Baran, will soon open. My guest, Jamshid Akrami, has made two documentaries about the Iranian cinema. The latest is Friendly Persuasion, Iranian Cinema After the Revolution. He is Iranian and has lived in the U.S. for more than 20 years. He teaches at William Patterson University. He says that Iranian directors have figured out some creative ways of implying physical intimacy without showing it.
You know, the art of implication, I think that's what a lot of Iranian filmmakers have been using in their movies. And that's not very unusual in our culture. We have a long tradition of poetry, and poetry is all about indirect communication. And both Iranian audiences and Iranian filmmakers are familiar with those poetic traditions. And so it's applying them to filmmaking is not something that is difficult for people or for the filmmakers to do.
Can you give us an example of a scene that you really think succeeds in showing that there is a physical link between a man and a woman, even though it doesn't show it?
For example, in a Bahram Beyzai movie called The Travelers, you have a scene in which a couple that are about to get married meet and talk in terms of preparations for their wedding. And again, since you can't show this couple in the same room, because if you did, then you have to show a little more signs of intimacy, like maybe hugging or kissing, you know, things that are very normal in a relationship like that and for an enthusiastic couple. The filmmaker in that situation has decided to come up with a mise-en-scene in which the woman is by a window, and the young man is one story below in the street talking to the woman who's up there by the window. And, you know, when I saw that film, I was immediately reminded of some scenes in Romeo and Juliet, and especially the way that they're using the words to express their affection for one another. And, you know, the notion of these people being madly in love with one another is efficiently communicated, but at the same time, you have shown respect for the codes as well.
Another restriction that filmmakers have to deal with in Iran is that women have to be wearing a headscarf at all times. In real life in Iran, women wear a headscarf when they're in public, but they don't have to wear one when they're in the privacy of their home. But if you're making a movie, the woman has to be wearing the headscarf if she's at home, even if she's in bed, which is very unrealistic. So how do filmmakers deal with that when they're showing a scene at home?
Most of our more prominent filmmakers have decided not to stage scenes like that at all. If you follow the Iranian films, you may be surprised to see how the number of exterior scenes are much larger than the number of interior scenes. And that's partly because, you know, when you go inside a house, dealing with the restrictions become much more difficult. How do you show a woman having dinner with her family and at the same time covering her hair? So a lot of filmmakers have decided to just not bother with doing scenes like that in their movies. Therefore, they're doing a lot of outdoor scenes. And, you know, you think of a movie like The Circle, for example, which is about the oppression of women. And that film is entirely staged out in outdoor scenes.
There is one scene in a film that you excerpt in your documentary where a woman is wearing her headscarf, and before she goes outside, she sprays a bit of perfume into the headscarf as if she's sexualizing an object that's meant to desexualize a woman.
Yes, you know, after the revolution, and this may come as a surprise to you, that the representation of women in Iranian film was completely the opposite of what you see these days. The nudity, for example, was allowed under the Shah, and the women were mostly used as what some critics would call a sex object in the Iranian films. So having gone from that one extreme to this new extremes is just has been something difficult for the filmmakers to deal with, because some of the filmmakers who are making movies now, they're also making movies under the Shah, and for them to have to go through the two ends of the spectrum, it's a very difficult adjustment. But I can really, I have difficulty thinking of these Iranian films, especially the films made by our more serious filmmakers, in which you don't see a subversive undercurrent. And the example that you used, you know, yes, I'm covering my hair, but I'm still using the perfume, is one example of that subversive undercurrent, which the filmmaker is still injecting into her film in this case. And you can see, as I mentioned, most of our better films are really coded with those protest signals.
There's a film that you excerpt in your documentary called Narges that's about a triangle between a man and two women. And in one of the scenes, a woman who's being kind of shut out of the triangle is running through the street, and it's unclear to me whether she throws herself in front of the truck and commits suicide, or whether a truck just runs her down as she's running through the street. But anyways, we don't see the moment of impact because the camera cuts away, but we do see her bloody body lying in the street. Is that considered extreme by Iranian standards?
No, I wouldn't call it extreme, because the moment of impact is not shown. It's happening outside of the frame, and mostly it's communicated to the audience in terms of the sound effect. And what's interesting about that moment when the woman, this older woman, is hit, as you know, the story itself is about a triangular relationship between a man, an older woman, and a younger woman. And although we've seen intimacy between the young man and the older woman throughout the film, and the younger woman is considered a rival, when the older woman is hit, it's the younger woman that comes to her help. And this is due to another censorship code, because the younger woman is allowed to touch the older woman, whereas the man who's been her lover just sits down, doesn't even approach the body. Because again, if he does, then he would have to touch the body or try to get some help for her, or, you know, there may be some physical contact, which will happen in a realistic situation. But because of the censorship codes, it's him who stays, and it's the woman's rival who actually goes to see what has happened.
Is the censorship code getting any more liberalized under President Khatami?
Yeah. We've seen some changes in terms of relaxation of the codes, especially in more recent years. There were some subjects that were taboo, and now they're being made. Two movies made by Behman Farmanara, The Smell of Camphor, and his more recent film, The House Built on Water, are about very current political issues in Iran. There's been more attention paid to depiction of women's problems, as we've seen in movies like The Circle. There's a new movie called Unfinished Song, which deals with how the female singing voice is officially banned in the Iranian media. And it deals with that problem. It's about the musicologist that goes to look for this woman with an unfinished song. And when he finds her, we realize that she's been thrown in jail because she dared to sing in public. There's a brand new film called My Name is Tarane, I'm 15. And it's about a 15-year-old girl who's impregnated and then abandoned by a young man. And she decides to keep the baby and fight to sort of establish her situation in a society that basically doesn't tolerate a teenage girl who's pregnant. That's, you know, a society that has no room for that kind of presence. So it's a daring, bold movie. And these are the kind of films that you could not have made a few years ago.
Let me mention something that I think is very paradoxical in your documentary about Iranian films. On the one hand, many of the directors say that they think one of the reasons why Iranian cinema has grown the way it has and has become as important as it's become is because Hollywood movies aren't shown in Iran, and therefore there's no competition. Because wherever Hollywood movies play, it tends to like wipe out the country's film industry. On the other hand, these same directors say that the movies that influenced them the most were like Hitchcock movies and John Ford movies. So, you know, these directors love American movies. They've been influenced by American movies, and yet they feel their own movies are popular because now American movies aren't shown in their country.
Yes, you know, in both cases, you're right that the Iranian filmmakers, most of them are in love with American films, and most of them admit that they have learned how to make movies from following the work of the American masters. But at the same time, it was a fact that before the revolution, cinema in Iran was dominated by Hollywood films, you know, as is the case in, I would say, every other place. And because of the dominance of American cinema in Iran, the domestic films had difficulty attracting viewers, even the ones that were purely commercial films. The situation was even more difficult for artistic films. But after the revolution, the Iranian cinema has turned into the only game in town, basically. But at the same time, there's a flourishing bootleg video market in Iran, and there are people who bring them to your house, basically. You know, you have your own video delivery person, and he knows you, he knows your family, and you just order the films and he delivers. But even on a more open market, there are a sort of token number of American films that are shown from time to time in Iran, especially in the Fajr Film Festival, which is the most prominent showcase of Iranian films, but they also have an international component in which they do show American films. You'd be happy to know that they have a competition section, and this year Jack Nicholson won the Best Actor Award for his performance in Sean Penn's movie The Pledge.
Can you satirize religion in Iranian films?
No. Up until 2 years ago, you couldn't even have a mullah who's an Islamic priest, a religious priest in Islam. You couldn't even show a mullah in your film. There's been instances where there is a mullah, for example, in the film, or there are religious references that people in the safety of dark theaters show a little bit of resentment by hissing or jeering. And I think that's the situation that the clergy, who's basically running the country right now, are trying to avoid. For example, there was a controversial film last year called Under the Moonlight. And the central character in that film is a seminarian who, right before he's about to put on the garb and become a clergy, goes through some doubts and a period of soul searching. And during that course of soul searching, he also encountered situations in which they make fun of mullahs. And it was a big surprise as I was watching that movie for the first time that they've allowed scenes like that. But at the end, he becomes a mullah, he puts on the clerical garb, and he becomes a mullah. And the message of the film is, like any other profession, you can be a good mullah or a bad mullah. And so he decides to become a good mullah.
My guest is Iranian film scholar Jamshid Akrami. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Jamshid Akrami, and he is a film professor and the director of two documentaries about the Iranian cinema. How old were you when you left Iran?
I was 26.
And why did you leave, and when did you leave?
Well, I left a year before the Iranian Revolution, and at the time I left, there was no sign of the coming revolution, basically. The Shah had a pretty strong grip on the country, and it was difficult to predict the kind of revolution that was in the making.
Were you already making movies when you left, or writing about movies?
Yeah, I was a film critic. I had been a film critic for close to 10 years already.
And what was it like to be a film critic in Iran? Were you writing for a newspaper?
I had the time of my life. I was writing for a newspaper, and I was the editor of a weekly film magazine, and I had my own television show.
Oh.
Iran, before the revolution, was a thriving film capital. You know, some of the American films used to open in Iran the same time they would open in New York or in London, in Paris. And there was a film festival called Tehran International Film Festival that was really huge, one of the top film festivals in the world, and both in terms of how lavish it was and how it would invite people like Elizabeth Taylor, and also in terms of showing the top international movies every year. And I think I got most of my film education from attending those festivals every year.
So when you left and you came to the United States, did you expect to see the same America that you'd seen in Hollywood movies?
You know, I had a strange feeling when I first came to this country. I was, I still remember crossing over the Triborough Bridge, and that's when I first saw the New York skyline, and I was really impressed by it, but it wasn't because I felt I was seeing something for the first time. In a sort of strange way, I thought I was, I wouldn't call it like going home, but I thought I was coming to a place where I had been before. It was that kind of a feeling. So in terms of, I think I was strongly influenced by American films to the point that I felt American culture was part of my own cultural heritage. Some people wouldn't forgive me for saying that, but, you know, that's how I honestly felt. And again, I was in Iran, I was pretty selective in terms of the films that I was seeing. I didn't limit myself to only seeing gangster movies or Western movies or, you know, the sort of Hollywood blockbusters. I would go to see the American independent films, you know, although there weren't too many of them. But my first exposure to John Cassavetes' films was in Iran, and even we could see some of the underground films that were being made here in the 60s. So I think I had a pretty realistic expectation of the American cinema.
Would you like to pick an Iranian movie that will be reaching American theaters sometime soon or is already in American theaters that you would particularly like to recommend to our listeners?
Oh, I would really like to recommend a Mr. Majidi movie by the name of Baran. Baran means rain, but it's the name of an Afghani refugee character in Iran. It's a film that was picked by Iran to represent Iranian cinema for the Oscar race, and unfortunately it wasn't nominated, but and this may sound a bit chauvinistic, but I really liked Baran better than the others, the ones that have been nominated. This is by a master filmmaker and it's about one of the strongest humanistic messages that I've ever seen in a movie. And, you know, as in his earlier movies, Mr. Majidi in this one also shows us how we all have a beauty and a beast within us, and then how he encourages us to get rid of our beast and let our beauty reign. And I can't think of any message that we need in this kind of time and this kind of world that we live than a message like that. It's really, when you leave the theater, you feel like a changed person after seeing Baran.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us.
No problem. My pleasure.
Jamshid Akrami's latest documentary is called Friendly Persuasion, Iranian Cinema After the Revolution. He teaches at William Patterson University. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.